Namaskaram everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Voiceless Podcast. And this one's quite special because there was always this question I had, which I wanted to ask Sadhguru. Not my personal question, but one time there was an opportunity while Sadhguru was traveling, to ask him a series of questions, but it did not come. So one of the questions one meditator asked me is like, how can people with disability make use of yoga? And is it actually possible for them to transform their life? Isn't it hard to do all these Hatha Yoga practices, someone who is differently abled? And this was a question I genuinely wanted to ask Sadhguru whenever I would meet him, which seems to be quite impossible. And this is not something that is very deep within me also, to be honest. But the Guru has his ways of answering the question. And I think he sent Markana as a living example of how yoga can truly transform a person's life. And if a person is willing, it's not only the internal chemistry, but the entire physical chemistry, the entire body can be transformed if one is willing to put in the effort. And Markana's journey is definitely an awe-inspiring and inspiration for each one of us to be regular with our sadhana. We make a lot of excuses, including me. I ate too much biryani, I did this, today I'll skip sadhana. Oh, that's my sister. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and do send him a DM. Send him your love after you listen to this podcast. So let's get into it. Namaskaram everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Today we have dear Markana with us from Quebec. Namaskaram. Yes, so thanks to Guru, today we have Markana as the guest. We have been trying to happen it for some time. Yesterday we were supposed to record this, but Markana had a yogasanas class. So how was the class, Anna?
It was amazing. I learned the yogasanas plus, and also just yogasanas at the yoga school, which is in Montreal, the Isha Yoga School, and it's called Samsara Hatha Yoga. And it's owned by Patrick Desrochers and Sébastien Deschamps. And these are two wonderful human beings and Isha Hatha Yoga teacher. And it's a privilege for me to have them in my life.
Definitely. Do they have an Instagram page where they announce the programs? How do you?
Yeah, they do. They have also a Facebook page, and they're pretty out there. The school is so busy that they have to build a bigger one. So
oh, wow, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. So Anna, without further ado, let's go into the podcast. But before I go into it, just want to tell the audience, the audio version of this will be available on Spotify and Apple Podcast. So you can definitely check out the audio version of this there. So with your permission, Anna, shall we go into the podcast?
Of course. First, I just want to tell you thank you very much for the opportunity. And I appreciate you asking me to participate in this podcast.
So we would like to really know about your journey, Anna, and even before Isha and being a seeker, like before the seeking days, how you were as a person, your childhood. I'm guessing that you grew up in Quebec, or did you grow up somewhere else?
Yeah, I grew up in Quebec. So it was in a small village close to a river and near some fields also, so pretty much surrounded with nature. Now I'm in Montreal because I moved to the city for school a few years ago, but I'm from the river and the fields. So it was a lovely childhood, which had its challenges though, because I was born with severe bilateral clubfoot, which means that your feet, instead of being like this, they're literally like that.
Okay.
So I had to have many years of treatments and surgeries, and I had to wear casts, up from the thighs up to the feet for years. And my mom had to, take me to the hospital every day when I was a baby, like an hour and a half road to go and to go back. And after that, it was like every 2 days, and then every week, and then every month. So like, I've been going to hospitals and not having a good health for most of my life. So it got better with the treatments when I was a kid, and I was able to do most of what most people could do. I had my limits. I had pain a lot, but I never let that bring me down necessarily, and I always wanted to do as much as the others, you know. So when I got about 8 year old or something, they noticed that something was wrong also with my jaw. Like it stopped growing, and the rest of my face, everything was growing, right? So the doctors followed this condition until I was maybe like 13, 14, and then they decided that I needed the surgery because I could put my thumb like between my, you know, the lower teeth and the upper teeth. I could put my thumb in between. So when I would eat, my teeth would go in my palate, and like I would bleed and it would hurt myself.
Oh, okay.
So I had to have two reconstructive surgery of the lower jaw to be able to eat properly and everything. So this was like, for each time, it was like a month and a half of eating with this, with like a syringe and a straw, because my teeth were like, you know, like laced together with like a wire. So that was a lot also, and going through that, doing the early teenage years also wasn't easy. So I always been someone, like before, I used to struggle a lot with confidence. I always thought like I, you know, because of how I was born with my feet, I have one leg which is much shorter than the other one, and I also have a foot that is much shorter than the other one. So I have my left foot, which is like a size 10, and my right foot, which is like size 12.
Okay.
So many, like this created a lot of asymmetry in my body also, and like kind of made it really difficult. So when I got to, I was about 17, my left foot started to go bad again. Like when I was a baby, they used to be like that, then they fixed it, and then my left foot started going like this. And it hurt so bad, I needed to walk with a cane, and I could almost not walk anymore. And it slowly degressed. Also, it got worse and worse and worse and worse through the years. So with the healthcare system here, we tried to find what was the issue. We couldn't find. We thought that maybe it was my club feet. Well, I thought that maybe it was my club foot who was coming back, but it was not the case. That's what the doctor told me. So then through like in 2017, I got a complete reconstruction of my left feet again, because I had a reconstruction of when I was a baby. Now they did it again in 2017 because they thought that just with the surgery, they will replace the feet and then it would be fine, you know. But meanwhile, my left foot started going bad also, and my knee would literally fold backwards, you know, and my hips got completely like misaligned. My back, I have also, it's getting really better now. It's almost gone, but I have a bit of a scoliosis that's left. I used to have both, you know, the shoulder blades, like were kind of detached from each other. My neck was misaligned also, and we were trying to figure out what was the issue, because I was in constant pain all the time. So starting from when I was like 17, so which means I was born in 96, so when was this? Maybe 2014?
Yeah. How was this all mentally for you, like as a physical?
Oh, it was really difficult.
Right.
It was really difficult.
So during your school days, how did you manage? Like, how were you? How did you make friends? Were they all good to you? Did you face any struggles in school when you were?
I had good friends, and I've always been open to talk about my issues to the people who were interested also. So instead of like, because when I was younger, you know, kids can notice that there's a kind of a difference. You know, when I was wearing shorts, it'd be like, oh, you have a small leg or something like that, because mm-hmm. I have a calf, which is really, really small also. But I used to go and tell them about why and everything, so they would understand and not make a fuss so much about the difference. But as I grew up, it was really difficult for me. Just the most difficult part was being in constant, tremendous amount of pain.
What was it? Was there any friend who really supported you, who you remember in your childhood, even with all these things?
Yeah. I'd say that I have a few friends which made like great things for me when I was around the time when I reconstructed my foot again. Like when I was I was about to start university, but I couldn't go because of that. So I was maybe like around 20 or 21. Maybe around that area. So I was like, I just had my surgery and I was in a wheelchair and I lived in a studio, so like an apartment, but really, really small. And the apartment block where I lived was like in on top of a hill and I was in a wheelchair, so I couldn't leave that place. So at times it was difficult to get food. It was difficult to, well, I spent most of my time alone also dealing with this. So I had friends that went to school with me. They studied in music, so we played a lot of music together. And they went to see me, they took care of me, they brought me things that I, if I needed things, or they were there, right? But it also made me spend a lot of time alone. And that at first was really uneasy and uncomfortable, and I didn't like it. But it turned out to be one of the best things that could happen to me because I got to know myself also. Because for almost 10 years, we were going from specialist to specialist, from neurologist to neurologist, from a specialist in rare diseases in Montreal. And I've seen like all the best doctors here. And I did all the tests because I had like neurological pain, muscular pain, skeletal pain, everything. So I have a disease which is degenerative, and it's a neuromuscular skeletal degenerative disease, but they don't know which disease it is. It's not something that is known up to medicine yet. So we've looked, we did everything, and there was one test that I could have done, which they would have scanned my whole genome, but I would have had to go to the States to do it, to the United States, but it would have been like $100,000. And I didn't have
money. Okay.
So then when I learned that, I was like, well, I need to find a solution. Because at this time I was not doing well at all. I was like, I had a difficult time to leave my bed for more than half an hour a day at this point.
Right.
So I was almost not eating. I was just wishing that the next day I wouldn't wake up. It was that bad. I was diagnosed with major depression and severe anxiety also. So I was really not doing good at all.
What was your diet like when you're going through such a condition? Are you able to have all the food, or is there a restriction on food?
So what happened is that I had a friend which recommended me to an Ayurveda doctor, which it was based in Thailand.
Okay.
So I had a Zoom call with him or a video chat with him, and I explained it about how I felt and everything, and he gave me some food restrictions, what to be careful about, and it was mainly meat. Red meat, and I used to love that. So I was really carnivorous before. So I stopped all the meat. I tried to eat more fresh foods and less, cold water. Less right. Really cold water, because I used to drink that a lot too, but it made my body stiff in a way. So it was to try to eliminate everything that made my body stiff, because one of my symptoms was that the body gets in like permanent spasms. So like it the muscle gets crisp and like it just stays like that and it deforms, So like my whole legs were like completely crooked. Like I had to like change so many things about the alignment of my legs, my back and everything. It was not easy at all. And at one point, what happened is that right after I spoke to that doctor and he gave me like the food restrictions, he also gave me like some simple yogic exercises just to move my ankles a little bit, you know, and then move the knee and try to get a little bit of strength back. So I got really committed towards this, and I was doing it two to three times a day. And he gave me also the Mahamrityunjaya chant by Sadhguru to learn.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and then I started to learn this and to sing this, and it made me feel great. And around the same time, I haven't learned about Sadhguru much at this point. Just sent me a chant, and I don't really know who he is and everything, but I like the chant.
Yeah.
And there was a girl, I went to a CGEP with her. CGEP is like college in Quebec. So she knew I was not going well, and she asked me, what are you doing? What are you eating? What's your routine at the moment? Because she became a nutritionist, right?
Okay.
So I told her I switched to vegetarian diet, that I ate like two times a day instead of three and stuff like that. And I did a bit of yogic exercises, simple stuff. And then she told me, do you know about Sadhguru? And I was like, well, I just know a chant. And she was like, do you know about the Inner Engineering book? And I was like, no, I don't. What's that? Because I got intrigued, because I just read like what kind of made me go towards the Ayurveda teacher is that I just read Yogananda's autobiography.
Nice.
And I loved it, and I was like, okay, maybe if I found someone like this, he could help me.
Right.
Right? Because I had still in my mind at this point the immature thought that maybe someone would do something for me.
Who gave you that book, Anna? Who gave you that book? How did you find it?
Yogananda, I don't know how I fell on it, but I just downloaded it on the internet and I read it on my computer.
Okay. Beautiful.
Like a download PDF, you know?
Yeah, that book finds all of us during the beginning of our journey, I think.
What?
That book finds all of us.
Yeah.
The beginning of.
Yeah, definitely. So I really love the book, but I was like, man, this yogi is not alive. I need somebody who's alive. And I just had this thought in my mind. And then she talks to me about Inner Engineering. And then I read that. And then I really fell upon something, because what I read, it didn't feel like I was really learning anything new. It felt like I was remembering stuff. It felt like, okay, yeah, this is how I used to think when I was really, really young and a child. And then I just changed my ways because of society, and I got influenced by many things. But this is what I used to care about. This is what I used to think like. It was like remembering. And then I was like, I need him to help me, right? I had this immature thought that like maybe he can do something for me. Like, you know, fix me. But then, you know, with time you learn that nobody's going to fix yourself but you. And you have to do the work. You have to be disciplined. You have to put the efforts. You have to do everything. Somebody can give you tools, but you have to use them. So I read the Inner Engineering book, and I just thought about it for a while, because, you know, here in Canada and also in the States, you know, religion had quite a big impact, and not necessarily positive impact in the last maybe 100 years. So people got really abused by religion and everything. And the word guru is really associated with, you know, dominance and corruption and abuse and everything for people, most people here. So I had a lot of suspicions. I was really unsure. I was like walking a bit on eggshells, because I didn't want to get trapped into something or feel like I, you know, lose my freedom or whatever. I had lots of doubts. So I just took a bunch of time to think about it. And every time I had a certain doubt, then in a certain way, Sadhguru would just dismiss my doubt with, like, I would just listen to a video and he was talking about something else entirely, but he said something that cleared a certain doubt for me. And I was like, okay. And the more and more I felt like okay, maybe I just should try, because I won't know until I don't give it a try. So then in 2020, it's been about maybe already 6 months that I've been doing, you know, the exercises from the doctor and the Mahamrityunjaya chant and everything. And then I'm like, okay, maybe I should do the program, the inner engineering program. So then I did that.
Online or was it offline? Like, was there a program?
I did it online because it was at the beginning of the pandemic. So there was like nothing and I was like alone at home and everything. And I was like, okay, I think I should just try this, see what this is all about and not expect anything from it I had nothing to lose, you know? Like, I was losing everything already. My legs were not working, even my hands. Like, I had difficulty with my hands. I couldn't play my instruments anymore. Like, it was not going good. So I did inner engineering, and it changed everything for me. Literally everything. Like, you know, when you're sick, when you're really sick, you feel like you have no power over what's happening to you at all. You feel like it's just happening and you're like in water and just like the waves are washing you away and you're just trying to keep afloat, but it's not doable. That's what I was thinking. And I was like, I cannot do anything. Nobody can do anything for me. Doctors can do anything for me. What am I going to do? I'm young. I'm going to grow old. It's going to get worse. What will happen to me? So he gave me the power back. He gave me the perspective to understand that it is my responsibility. It's not the responsibility of my doctors or of the healthcare system. And to focus on what it is that I can change. Because there were things which I couldn't change at the time, but you know, if you just change one little thing there, one little thing there, one little thing there, which are achievable and doable for you, in a while, you're going to see that you've made a whole lot of progress. And that progress will make stronger grounds for you to make more progress. And then it will just keep on going also. So I did the program like that, and it just completely blew my mind, to be honest. But I still have my suspicions because I've always been, you know, someone really skeptic and someone who don't believe. And I was just like, I also had like, I didn't want anything religious. And that's when also it got a bit easier for me, because I really understand that it's not a religion. It's just tools. It's just things that you can do, and you will have a result if you do those things. It's not just a blind belief. You have to have the experience of it by yourself and build the experience within yourself. But so months after I did the inner engineering program, I had to wait months before I got initiated in Chambali, because it was the pandemic and they didn't do like as regular as right now, you know, so I had to wait. So then I did Shambhavi, and it was, it was still in 2020, maybe like 4 or 5 months after I did the program, the online program. And it was so difficult for me because I was not in a good physical condition. I couldn't even sit like I'm sitting right now. Like, just to sit, you know, basic, like, you know, like this.
Right, right.
It took me 3 months of work just to be able to sit like this for 10 minutes. So then when I did Shambhavi, just doing the exercises, it took everything from me. It was so difficult and it hurt so bad, but I could not give up, and I would just keep going. And like, I learned also to not react to my pain and to just observe it like any other sensation. So that you don't just go like, ouch, it hurts, or you get tense or whatever. Like, pain is there. It's just like anything else is going to be fine. Even if it hurts as hell, it's going to be fine. So I pushed through the whole program like this. And I got to the time of the initiation, and you know, like to do it twice at this moment.
Right.
So the first time I couldn't finish it because my legs hurt too much. And I was, you know, the program, you sit on the floor like for the whole process and then there's the initiation. So I was already pretty much burnt out by the end we arrived to doing it. So the first time, not much happened because I had to, you know, pull back my leg and it didn't hurt and everything. And I kind of stopped it. But then we did it the second time. And between the first time and the second time, there's a pause and you go in the shower and then you come back and you're rested. So this time, then I did it, and it was, and now, like, there's no words for that experience. And when I got out of it, to me, it felt like I was back to being, like, 5-6 year old, and I could just, like, just be there and look at things, and, you know, not being completely trapped in your thoughts and in your mind and nothing, and you're just there. And that changed the whole thing for me. And I was like, okay, from this day, I'm just going to keep doing this because it works. And slowly, Shambhavi, like, really cleared a lot of things for me that got stuck on my energy system, definitely. And because I had a lot of things happened also. Like, I had a beautiful childhood. My mom was fantastic, but a lot of things happened also. Like my dad was something else, and we didn't have quite a good relationship by then, and it was difficult. So I had a lot of unresolved issues that I was carrying, and to be honest, I even think that I might have carried this from another life also.
Right.
This is
because a lot of people carry, you know, their childhood trauma, our relationship with our parents. These are things that bother us, but somehow we tend to put it out of our mind. So do you think going through a process like this, Kriya practice, like a lot of people use therapy, which definitely is a beautiful process to help. So do you think adding a Kriya also supports in that healing?
Actually, process? I did a lot of therapy, and I did a lot of, you know, I went to see psychologists, psychiatrists. I've seen a bunch, and I did a bunch of work like that. But none, absolutely none of them was as helpful to me as just the basic inner engineering online class.
Mm-hmm.
Like the tools I received there, the perspectives, the way of seeing things. Like I was like, how did I not know this before? Or how did anybody tell me this before? Because, you know, you're like there for 5 minutes, like, I don't know, maybe an hour in the office with them, and they talk a little bit, but you never really get to the root of things because you don't have much time. And then you have just a few sessions, and then they're like, oh, that's all we can do for you, so you're going to have to go to someone else or whatever. So it never gets in depth. And it's not with an hour a week that you're going to actually, you know, arrange what doesn't work inside yourself. So the inner engineering process, it taught me to just spend time with myself and to try to understand myself and to figure out what was the issue, you know. And even before I did, I did Shambhavi, and then the month of May after that, I remember it was a few days before the new moon, the Buddha Purnami. And Sadhguru talked about something, and he said, you know the story when Buddha is like, okay, I need to know what this is, so I'm going to sit there, and until I find out, I won't get up. So I heard this story, and I was like, if he did something, I can do something similar, maybe not like that, but I can try to do something. And I also remember Sadhguru saying, you know, just sit still. And watch yourself. Just sit still. Don't do anything. Sit still. And you will know things. Right? So at that moment, I was not able to really sit for a long time. So I used to lay down. And I took, you know, he says a thing, like he says, if you can spend 3 days alone with yourself, no books, no cell phone, nothing. So I took the Buddha Purnami of 2020. And I spent the day before the full moon, the day of the full moon, and the day after isolated in my room. I would leave, I would go out to go to sleep and like to go to the bathroom, just to eat a little, but I did nothing else than just laying on the ground and doing nothing, observing what was going on in my body at this point. So I feel like I found out with observing that there's a certain blueprint that your system has deep within yourself, like the way it's supposed to be. Mm. And on top of that is how it is right now. So how it is right now is like a result of what happened in the time between how it was and how it is, right? So if you go back in that time gradually, I used to do like, to try to go back like, you know, like a month ago, what happened, how was my body? And then the month before that, what happened, how was my body? And then go back until I was a kid to try to figure out what happened, what kind of impact did it have on my body? How was I feeling at this point? What was my situation socially, mentally, emotionally, and everything? And you find out that there's kind of, because if you go back in your memory and you remember certain things, your body's going to feel a certain way. And it's a part of the way you felt when that hasn't happened. So they kind of create knots in your system. I see it like that. It's kind of knots. And you're able to, if you just watch the knot with nothing else but just your awareness, and you don't invest any emotion or whatever in it, it gets to untie itself a little bit. And with doing this slowly and just trying to consciously bring back the blueprint that you have, the blueprint which is supposed to be there, you can realign your system also. So I spent a lot of hours doing stuff like this just to observe what was going on, to see and to remember when I was six, how did my feet felt? How did it feel? How could I run? How far could I run? How did I run? What pain did I have when I ran? And everything. And I just went back to my life like this. And then, you know, you have the image of yourself that you are right now, and there's what you want to be, right? And what you want to be, you can create it however you want. Right, so I had to create an image of myself which was healthy and which I didn't have at that moment, because I never really was healthy in my life. So I looked at people who were healthy, I looked at how they walked, I looked at how they stood. Sadhguru was a big example for me, and one of the main reasons as of why I really went forward with him is because he was able to sit like this for 3 hours. And I used to, you know, when the pandemic, he did like daily videos.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But really made me like learn about him a lot also, and have more confidence and everything. So I was flabbergasted to see him sit like this for hours while I couldn't even like stand up or sit without pain. I was like, oh, I need to be like that. So slowly. So with the yogic practices that I learned, with the, you know, moving the ankles and everything, then with my observation, and I got a bit stronger, but not much. And I was wanting to go to India. I was like, okay, go to the ashram so that I get myself fixed. I need to learn, right? So I wrote to them, but it was complicated to really get like an answer which satisfied me. So I just get writing back to see who could do anything for me, what could be done and everything. And so they put me in contact with the Isha Hatha yoga teacher from here, which is Patrick from Samsara, the yoga school where I went yesterday.
Okay.
So he has me on Facebook, and I'm like, okay, I see. He looks like, you know, sitting properly on his picture. He looks... So I just go and I see that he's a Isha Hatha yoga teacher. And then I'm like, okay, like maybe they're sending something towards me, right? So then we contact each other and we speak a little bit about my health condition, and I tell them that I want to go better and that I'm taking my health in my own hands and that I want to heal myself by myself. So he tells me, okay, there's not much I can teach you right now because you're not in shape enough. Your body is too weak and everything. So the only thing I can teach you is look at you. So that's the only thing for now. So I was like, okay. So his school back then was not in Montreal. It was in Longueuil, which for me took about maybe an hour 15 to go in the transportations and everything. And I had lots of difficulty to walk. So I managed to get there. And, you know, on the way, I was scared. I was just like, where am I going? Am I getting... Because I still had such suspicions, you know. So, and he told me on the phone, he was like, if you're interested, after Bhuta Shuddhi, we're going to do this sanity puja.
Huh.
And I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what the puja was. So I was thinking about it on the way there, thinking about my suspicions and everything. And then I get there. This is something I will remember for my whole life. Because, you know, you hear Sadhguru talking about energy and you wonder if all this stuff is true, whatever. I remember I used to be like that. And then I opened the door of the yoga school and, man, it hit me in the face like nothing else hit me in the face before. The energy was just like, phew. Mm-hmm. It like enveloped me and kind of gave me a hug, you know, and I felt so good. I was like, what is this place? Like, mm-hmm. Right there, much of my doubts were clear because I experienced what was talked about without expecting. So I was just like surprised by this. And then I went downstairs, we talked a little bit about my condition a bit more, and then we did Bhuta Shuddhi initiation. So I did that, and then he asked me, would you like to stay for the Sanidhi Puja? And I was like, you know what, I'll stay. And at this moment, I just told myself, I said, okay, if you're staying for this, and if you want to really know what it is, you have to go there without any suspicion, without doubt. You just have to watch the whole process and just give yourself to it and see what happens. Just let it go, you know? Try to surrender for this, just for this moment, and we'll see after. So then I did, and I sat there with my heart open. You know, I was like, if there's something to happen, let it happen. And I watched the puja process. And then, you know, we sing the Brahmananda Swarupa chant, and you just chant this. And after that, you sit for some time. And when I sat, I just started to cry and to cry and to cry. And like, I couldn't hold it. I couldn't control it. I was like, you know, big tears, like really crying. Like something really touched me from deep, and it felt like many things came out also at the same time. It's like something touched me and just things poured out. And the way I had at this moment was just to cry. So I was like embarrassed at first because I was just crying in front of those people that I don't know. And I was like, I'm sorry, like it never happened to me like this before, and I'm not sure what's happening. And they were like, it's okay, you don't have to feel bad about it. This is fine, it's a good thing. I actually cried like I spent maybe half an hour there just crying after like the process ended, and then I left. And I just remember how I felt when I left Samsara and the yoga school. It just felt like a whole new thing opened up for me, and I was just crying on the way. I was on the bus and I was crying still. Like I couldn't, like that day I would remember for the rest of my life because it cleared everything for me, because I felt it inside of me, you know.
Beautiful, Anna. Could you give the audience, like people, foreigners who are listening, what a sanidhi is, and you know, they might not know what a sanidhi is.
Okay, so a sanidhi is a form, okay, which has been energized by Sadhguru. So it's like, I think it can be made, the one which they have a samsara, I think it's made in brass, but I think it can also be made with mercury. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, stone, brass, and mercury. Three are there.
Okay. So it's like it has the shape of the feet on it, because you know how the system works. More energy that goes out is through the feet. So if you want to receive energy, through the feet is a good way. And so, and also the feet are also a symbolism of the path, right? So like, he's on a certain path, he walked the path, I'm walking this path. So there's the feet. But it's not about the feet, it's about the energy that it gives off. It gives off. It's just crazy. It's a way to be in Sadhguru's presence. But I didn't know any of that before I experienced it. That's the crazy thing. I didn't know what a sanity was. I didn't know the thing about the feet. I didn't know nothing. You know, I just came there ready to experience what could be experienced and open to it. And it just cracked me up, literally. But beautiful.
So on the way back in that bus journey, how were you? Like, what was going within you? Because I have experienced this moment myself. So what was going within you? Like, did you look back at your life? When you're going back after the Sannidhi Puja in the bus?
What was happening is transformation is a weak word. Okay, it's not a proper word, but I was melting. Maybe I could say that this way. Like everything that didn't deserve to stick on me with that, or that didn't have to stay there, it just started falling away and falling away and falling away. It's still falling away. It's still burning. But actually at this moment, it's just that I was like, okay, I've experienced some of the things that are talked about. I know it's not just jibber jabber. I know. I know that there's something true and real with that. So then it made me really want to pursue in this direction also, because I had a taste of it. I had a taste with Shambhavi also, but this just cleared most of my suspicion, because even after Shambhavi, I was a bit, I had some restraint. But once I really let go of the restraint and I was like, okay, let's see fully what this has to bring me, everything changed. Everything changed. And you know, today, like, I still cannot believe how I'm living, how I'm feeling. I never even thought that I could feel well like this, that I could be in as much, not many pain as this. Like this life, I couldn't even have imagined for myself, literally. Like, it's just too beautiful. Like, every day, I end up crying for a beautiful reason. Every day. You know, I worked right now in a funeral home. So I'm in touch every day with people who just lost someone, and there's a lot of emotions in that. And there's a lot of grace too, because you see people at the point where they're very vulnerable and where they have been touched by something. And in a way, they're open also, because they're thinking about the unknown. And they're like, I'm not sure where is the person, if there's something else after, they don't know. And to be able to just make this whole process easier for them and to support them, it's a privilege. And just doing this job, I could never have done this without yoga or without Sadhguru, because I would have been not equipped enough to deal with all of that without being affected by it. You know, seeing bodies being with ashes every day and everything. Now, the way I see it, it's a privilege and it's an honor to be handling the ashes, to be one of the last persons to actually see the body, which is the vessel that carried someone through their whole life. There's a lot of grace in that field of work. But if I hadn't done yoga, if I hadn't had Sadhguru in my life, like, first of all, I would not even be working right now, because I just started to work like 5 months ago about that. I'm just getting better and better, and now I can work 40 hours a week and everything. But before that, I didn't work for 6 years almost because I couldn't. The doctors forced me to stop. They were like, you're going to really get yourself worse if you keep working like that. So I had to stop. I had even to stop going to school. I had many plans. I had to let all of that on the side and just spend time alone. And it was, I thought it was a malediction at first, but it was the greatest blessing.
Beautiful, beautiful, Anna. So from there, carrying the Buddha Shuddhi process, how did that happen?
So I
because it's just 10 minutes. It's just a 10 minute process, right? People will think, what will happen doing this 10 minute process? You know.
So actually, at first, it was not much happened at first. Just you know, you feel more peaceful a little bit, and slowly though the integrity of my body became more solid and stronger a little bit. I felt a bit more solid, and it made the exercise with the ankles and the knees and everything, it made them kind of work easier a little bit. So I just did that and did that and did that with Ishakriya and also Shambhavi. So I just maintained that sadhana a lot. And then at a certain point, I got able to slow, because look, I'm going to show you something. I used to walk with this.
Yes. Okay. Oh.
So this is what I used to need to walk. I had the two of them. Okay. So without those, I couldn't even leave home. But at a certain point, because what I used to do also was just spending a lot of time walking slowly the way I would walk and see how everything moves and try to correct it, like a little bit by a little bit. Because it may seem dumb, but if you want, you could make your finger move like this, like naturally. You just have to really focus and make it work like that slowly, and it could go in a totally different way that it's going right now. So it was like to kind of... Because my right foot, the thing that was touching the floor, the only thing was like the two small toes, but on the reverse of it. So slowly, I got to do like this a little bit, and then I was able to practice walking without the aids because I was like replacing my knees by myself and everything. And when I got at a certain point, when I got better enough, then I contacted Samsara again, and I was like, okay, I think I can learn something more. What can I do? So he was like, okay, we're going to do this slowly, but I'm going to teach you in Gaurdana.
Okay.
So that's what I started with. I started with the seated postures.
Okay.
So I learned, I actually took out the dates so that I can be precise, tell you what date I started. Okay. Learning Angamardana was a process of more than a year.
Wow.
So, where is it?
What you just said in like a few seconds is something that people go through their entire lifetimes without, you know?
You said,
you were able to slowly move your feet like this with your awareness. That is something that no one is actually, no one thinks like that, I think. Someone who is going through such a struggle. For them, just doing the basic things is what matters. Just waking up, just... So I was just reflecting on that, you know?
It's just for all my legs, because the way they were and the way they are now, it's because I consciously changed the alignment. The sadhana, like Angamardana, Surya Kriya, and also the Yoga Sanas really helped me to find out, to see what was wrong, because you know when you're doing certain thing, you know how it is misaligned, you know how it could be better and everything, because you see also the examples, the models that they show you. So you're like, okay, my leg is like this, it needs to be like that, just by looking at other people. You know when I was saying that like I created an image of myself which was healthy? This is part of it. So I just constructed in my mind a body which is straight, and I have this image in my mind which became clearer than the image of me that I had, which was sick and crooked or whatever. And I just work toward the image of me that was healthy until I got there. And even now, the image of myself where I'm working at is far from where I am right now. It's going to be even better.
Beautiful, Anna. Please tell us about this 1 year Angamardana, you know, how
yeah So I started Angamardana on 10 August 2021. Okay.
Okay.
So these were the seated postures. So I worked every day, twice a day on these postures, which would take me everything I had. They were so difficult. Even at the yoga school, when I was doing them, Patrick, the teacher, like, he didn't think I would be able to finish the thing. I just pushed through the pain and pushed through, and I finished it. But every day I woke up, I had to repeat that. It was the most effort and the most difficult thing I did of my life. I had to repeat every day, twice a day. It was so much work, so much work. But then I got slowly better. And then at the start of October, I got to be able to actually do the lay down ones.
Right, right.
And then when I had, for example, the seated one, okay, then I would add a section. So then I would start to put the laying down on top of it. And when those two felt like I could add a little bit more to it, then I would do some more. So then I learned the third part at in December, at the start of December. And I worked on this for months and for months and for months. And then the last part was, you know, when you're, I just have accroupi in French. I don't remember. I'm so sorry.
Even I don't remember any of the poster names, actually.
You're like, yeah. Bend down. You're not like, not laying down, not up. You know, you're like
sitting, squatting. Squatting,
yes, poses. Like the squatting poses. So these I learned on April 2022. So it took me from like, from August 2021 to April 2022 to learn the whole thing. And I was committed and I did it every day. And like, it took me a lot of effort, man.
Beautiful, Anna, because for whoever is listening to this, and myself included, you know, sometimes most of us it takes so much time to do our sadhana, angamardana, it's so hard, and we skip. But I just want all of us who are listening to it to reflect it for a moment. You know, it's a privilege for us that, you know, we have been given such a body where we might not be able to do as easy as, you know, the person doing it on the screen, because he just seems to do it so effortlessly. But still, you know, it's still such a privilege that it's being offered to us and we can do it. So I think all of us should make an effort to be a little bit more regular with our sadhana. And thank you for sharing this, your effort, your, you know, your passion and dedication to make Angamardana happen for yourself. I just wanted to thank you for that.
I just needed to go better. You know, as I said, I could accept that I was sick, but I would not settle for that at all. And what I've always been curious about also, and what I've always seen in my mind and what I tell people so often, is like, I would be curious to see how somebody which has like perfect health, perfect body, if he would have done the same amount of sadhana that I did and put in the same passion and effort and consistency, what they would be like.
True.
Like, it's what it did to me, it's unbelievable. Like, I'm not the same. Even like my face changed, my whole body changed, the way I am changed. People around me are like, you're completely something different, you know? But I'm just wondering, imagine that you're healthy, you have a good body, you have a mind that's not too much of trouble for yourself, and you commit to yourself to getting even better than that, because there's no limit to how good you can be or how better you can become. And I want to see people commit like this. I'm curious to see what it would make, what it would create, like humans, because if it did that to me, who came from so far, who was so sick, who couldn't even walk properly, I'm really curious to see what it would do to someone which has a good health situation already.
Because, you know, many people tell me, you know, yoga is not for the differently abled. How will we do it? All these practices. But I hope, you know, they listen to this podcast and they understand, like, even if they are willing and if they put in the effort, nothing is impossible.
Yeah. You know? You just have to, you know, because if you look at the screen, like you said, you're like, oh my God, this guy is like, I remember I was learning the things and I used to laugh. I was like, that's crazy. But you don't look at what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Look at what you're doing and just try to do it a little better than you can.
True.
Just push a little more. That's what I used to tell myself. It was like I was in pain like hell, but I was like, this is just pain. Pain won't kill me. It's just a sensation. Push through it and do it. No matter what, you just do it. So then I built a kind of a discipline because, you know, I wanted to go to the ashram also and I couldn't because it was COVID. So I just made my home like an ashram pretty much. I was like, I'm going to wake up at the time where they wake up. I'm going to eat at the time where they eat. I'm going to do sadhana when they do sadhana. And I'm going to, you know, so I based my routine and my days because I didn't work back then. So I did my days mostly as how I would do it if I was there in India. So I was doing a lot of sadhana, eating twice a day, vegetarian food, waking up early and everything. And even now I'm waking up every day at like around 3:30 or 4.
Wow.
Because I have to do sadhana before going to work.
So on a lighter note, Anna, you know, all of us guys are trying to get the perfect hair and beard with all the shampoos. So tell us, how did you make that happen? Were you always gifted with such good hair and beard? Or?
I think I was, but I used to cut it. Okay. So I had like a short hair before and everything. And when I started to do yoga, I don't know why, but I just started to let it grow. And I haven't really cut it. Yeah,
you. If I could come, if we could, I feel like you are Jesus sitting over there. I imagine, you know, Jesus had such long hair and when he walked.
This is funny because, you know, I'm not any of that, but people around me, like at work or like even people in the street, they stop me and they tell me that. So I always feel a bit embarrassed. I'm like,
give us wine and bread. Do they tell you, give us some wine and bread from the air? Beautiful, Anna. So yes, Anna. So from there, how did your journey go? So after how was, like, which was the day you finally felt like, you know, oh, okay, Angamadana, I have finally, you know, managed to do it. And from there, the next step, how did you?
Well, you know, I did the seated practices, and from there on, I got more strength in my leg, really more strength. What it does to your body is just crazy. Okay,
right.
So I managed to slowly leave them aside and walk with canes. At first I used to walk with, you know, like double canes, but I didn't want to use them anymore. I'm going to learn to walk again by myself, because in my life I learned to walk 4 times.
Oh, okay. Is it okay? Okay,
so that this time is the last time. So I really try, like I said, to consciously bring more of the surface of the feet to the floor and to force the body to take, because, you know, the body is mainly earth and water. So if it's earth and water, it's moldable. We can mold it. We can change its form. So I did that, and after a while I was able to walk without the orthotics, with a cane, and then I let go of one cane because Angamadana was making me stronger and stronger, and I had one cane, and then I managed to let go of all the canes.
Wow.
There's actually a video, if you go on my Instagram, there's a video of me learning to walk. There's a difference maybe 6 months after I started my sadhana, and there's a difference about a year after that. And you can see the difference in the feet after it's completely replaced. And I did this on my own. And once I got stable enough on my 2 feet, then I learned other practices. So I learned Surya Kriya. I learned in August 2022. I learned Surya Kriya. And after that, in November, I learned the Yoga Sanas. And I just learned yesterday the Yoga Sanas Plus.
Okay. So yesterday you went for Yoga Sanas, or was it like a refresher? Like, you went?
Well, it's actually because when you do Yoga Sanas, when I did Yoga Sanas in November, I did... you do everything except the like three spinal
torsions
and you know, okay. the I have a blank. I just learned it yesterday, so forgive me.
Yes.
You know, like the thing when you're on your hands and
right.
Like this.
Mayurasana. Mayurasana. Is it Mayurasana?
I think it's the kapo, the frog.
Is oh it? Yes, Mandukasana. Is it Mandukasana?
Yeah. So forgive me for that. I just learned it. But we learned like those 4 last asanas yesterday and revised what we've learned previously. So it was amazing. And just to be also in the presence of this energy again, you leave the yoga school and you just feel refreshed and you feel like you're growing and shining. And it's like amazing.
Beautiful, Anna. So from being having a beautiful experience of sadhana, have you ever struggled with your practices also, like, you know, certain things have popped up or certain questions as a seeker might come? So how did you resolve all of that when it come and still stick to the path? Because I noticed, even for me or even for a lot of people, you know, initially the experience is very beautiful, but then a lot of things start coming up as you are very regular with the practice. So sometimes we know, do not have the necessary support or the sangha or other seekers, and we tend to drop and question the path. So how did you manage those questions in your own mind? Did you have a sangha who you could depend on? Or what were the tools that you used when such questions came in your mind?
So for me, it was so important to go better and to actually, I had no other choice than to just do this. And also I didn't work. I didn't have much distractions other than that. So for until I started to work recently, I just did sadhana twice a day, every day. And like, I just maintained that. I had some days where, you know, like you don't want to do it or whatever. So you do a little bit like less of it or whatever. There are some days, you know, where you do a bit less. But I really maintained an intense focus for about maybe 3 years continuously, and maybe 3 years and a half. And when I started to work, then it got a bit more difficult because, you know, I used to do about 7 hours of sadhana a day every day before. Now I had to short it out because, you know, just getting back to working, starting from working 0 hours a week for like 5-6 years to then working full time and doing sadhana and everything, I got a bit, it was challenging. It was challenging, definitely. So I'd say I like, even now there's some days where I don't necessarily do a second practice in the evening at the moment because I'm adjusting, but it's getting better. And also my work has turned into yoga. What I do has turned into yoga. So I do maybe less on the mat. I do about maybe 2 to 3 hours daily at the moment, but everything I do is yoga now. The way I am is yoga now. So it's like, you know, just dealing with death every day and not being touched, or like being touched but not affected by it, and staying graceful with the people around you and staying in a good mood with people that work that maybe you wouldn't have necessarily big affinities with or everything. This is all transforming into yoga also. So it's like maybe it's a bit less a yoga of the body, but it's the yoga of the way of being.
You have become yoga.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, I will talk about yoga on my social medias or whatever, because I feel like if you want to click, you want to click. If you don't, you cannot subscribe or whatever. You know. But in person, I don't necessarily talk about it much, but people ask me about it. You know, it's like, what happened to you? How are you like this now? You were like that, and they see my face changed also, and like my eyes changed and everything. So people are curious, so I talk to them about it to the extent of, depending on how much receptivity they have, I will say some things, I will not say some other things. I used to really talk about it. Now I don't have to talk about it. They just know. So,
like, are you in still contact with your childhood friends who, or any of your close acquaintance, relatives who might have seen you going through this, and then they see you now? Have they been like, "Whoa, what happened?"
Definitely, and they're all. It's a shock for the people who've seen me before and who are seeing me now. It's a world of difference, a world of difference. And even like, you know, people were, there's a lot of people who've seen me struggle a lot when I was in CEGEP, which is like college. I was studying in music. And this is where, like, when my health was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And like, my teacher saw me, my friends saw me, all the people, you know, people who knew me, they knew that I had a condition and that it was not supposed to get better. Doctors were like, you're not going to walk for long. I don't even know if you're going to live long or whatever. So now when people see me, they're all like, it's a transformation, you know, literally. It's not the same person. It's not the same body. It's completely something different.
So I would like to ask you, you said you're working in a funeral home. You know, yeah. Dealing with death, dealing, this is always considered a taboo in most of the cultures, yeah. I think, especially in a Christian culture. I'm not sure whether I feel maybe, you know, maybe even in my home also, you know, we don't talk about death. Death means, oh, if you talk about death, means death will come. That's,
yeah.
But, so being there, how is that, you know, being there, being with people, how do you see them? And when they come to you, you might be, like you said, you deal with whatever needs to be done, but you're not affected by it. But yet it's a huge possibility, like Sadhguru says, to be around, you know, when death happens, it's a huge possibility. I've even read a little bit of Osho where he says something like, if you feel like, you know, someone is dying, it is a huge possibility of meditation, because if you sit around such a person, it's a very tremendous possibility. So could you share about how you decided? I don't think, you know, normally people would want to work in a funeral home. You're like, but how did you consciously make that decision? You know, you wanted to do this.
So there's two main things. Okay. The first was when I slowly got better. And well, actually it starts from earlier than that. The main thing was like when I sat with the director of the Institute of Neurology in Montreal, and he told me that he didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know how much time I would have left, or if I would, you know, I asked him a question, he couldn't answer. So I had full of fear at this moment. I was like, okay, am I going to die? What is going to happen and everything? And you're scared to die. So you think about this a lot and you process that in a way. And I remember at one point, I just took a shower and I was in the shower and I had this kind of realization that, hey, bro, it's okay. It's not how much time you have left that matters. It's how you spend this time, how you are in this time. So I was like, from now on, from today, every day that I'll have will be a wonderful day and a beautiful day, because it could be my last. I don't know. And you know, it's like that for everyone.
True.
It could be your last day too, my last day. We don't know. I don't hold that for you. I don't hope that for me, but we don't know. So it just put that right up in my face. I had to confront it. And when I realized that it's just how I spend my time, I don't mind if I leave tomorrow. If I spend a good day today, I'm fine with it, you know? So I rose above this fear of that. And I knew that I looked at people around me. I looked at people and people are afraid of that. And I was like, I'm not afraid anymore. I could help them a little bit. Or just ease their pain. So then I was just, when I got better, I was looking for what kind of job would I like to do, you know, because you're just getting back into work. So you're like, yeah, I might as well choose something or try to choose something if I can. So I was just screening, you know, the different jobs that was possible to have, the different salaries and everything, just to see. And then I saw this, the funeral home. And I was like, you know what? I think that there I could feel useful. I think that what I went through could be useful. I have a lot of empathy as a person and compassion also. So I was like, I think that could be useful also. So then I was like, let's give it a try. And I had Sadhguru in the back of my mind who said, because I read the book Death also. And he says in there somewhere that like, one of the best things for yogis, if they want to train, is right. to spend time on the cremation ground to see that, to be in contact with that. Not in a morbid way, but just to make your body realize that this is what will happen also. So he says that it's a great aid for a spiritual process, right? So I was like, okay, if I go there, first I'm going to be useful. I'm going to be able to have my experience useful to people, and I will progress faster on my spiritual process also. And it's the closest thing we have here from cremation ground, because we don't have cremation grounds like in India here. We cannot see that. It's not available to the public, right? You cannot look at that. So I was like, this would be a good choice for me, because it would make me advance spiritually, like make me go forward, and also I would be useful. I would be helping people to cope better with what they're going through and everything. And, you know, like, it's crazy because maybe about 5 to 6 times a week at work, because what I do is that I will receive the people who just lost their loved one, and I will organize the whole funeral thing with them. I will, like, book the cremation, book the transportation to go get the body and everything. I even went to go get bodies at the hospitals also and everything. So I do a bit of everything. I will put ashes into urns and all of that. And what I hear from people, and it's not people who have anything to do with, like, spirituality or, like, that would naturally talk about energy or stuff like that. It's older Quebec people and, you know, people that you wouldn't think that this would come out of their mouth. But what they say is, like, your energy is really something particular.
Right.
And it makes me feel good. It makes me feel at ease. And it makes me want to tell you everything that's wrong.
Right.
And this I hear a lot and a lot and a lot, and I know that this is because of yoga.
Hmm.
This is just the yoga outpouring, you know?
Beautiful, beautiful, Anna. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, sharing something from your life with us. So I see that there's a huge Dhyanlinga photo and a Dhyanlinga Yantra. So
yes.
how did you decide to, you know, bring it? And could you tell the audience what it is, like Dhyanlinga Yantra? Or Yantra is something, you know, in our Indian culture, we are used to going to temples, having deities, having yantras. So it's very okay for us, I think, in a general way, if you're brought up in a, you know, in Bharat and in a little bit of a Hindu upbringing. But tell us, someone coming from your side, for someone who's listening, someone who's like you, like, what is that and why you decided to bring it?
So I did, why do I remember the name? You know, there's an event that they do in the Dhyanalinga, which is like, they do it like online at some times in the year. What is it?
Panchabhuta Kriya.
Yeah, Panchabhuta Kriya. Thank you. I had a blank of it.
Yeah.
But I participated to that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they give you the energized vastram, and then you do a few things and everything, and then you just sit there. And what I felt when I sat there, I haven't felt like that in my life. I felt so still, and, you know, I knew that this kind of things would have this kind of energy, this kind of feeling that was inside of me at this time. This is what would help me go better. It's like, it's not this is it, but it's a contribution. It would support me, you know? So because I could not go to the ashram and I wanted to be in the presence of this kind of energy, I brought the yantra home. And what it does is that it's unbelievable. Like, people that don't know a thing about yoga, that don't, they just come into the room and they become silent. They just become silent, and they will say there's a big silence in this room. They can feel the difference between outside the room and inside the room. So it's clearly something that you can experience. And, you know, people will also ask me sometimes, how is it that you were this sick, but you managed to have the energy to still do everything you did? Most of this is because of Dhyanalinga and because of Bhairavi also. Because they're just, if you connect to them, you can just take energy from them. Because they're like an infinite source of it, right? So you can just draw what you need and use that for certain purposes to get better, to be more whatever you want to be. You can just become so much better with it. It's kind of the same thing as, like, you know, try to be a musician if you've never heard about music and you've never seen anybody play music. It will be very difficult. But if you have the image of what a musician is, you know what music is, then you can learn music, you can play music, because you have something to go towards. And Dhyanalinga and Bhairavi, for me, this is what they are. They're like, they brought a whole new different kind of energy in my life. And now, you know, there's how you are energetically, how they are, and you slowly just try to become like that.
Mm.
You slowly make those energy a part of you, and they live through you, and you become more and more solid, because the energy that they are can support much more than what you actually could be able to support on your own. So when I felt like I didn't have the energy to do my sadhana, I didn't, it hurt, whatever, I would just do the Bhairavi sadhana, and then afterwards I would feel recharged and I would do Angamandana and all that.
Thank you. I think you beautifully put it when Sadhguru says, you know, Dhyanlinga is beyond time and space, and if you're willing, you can access him wherever you are.
Yes.
And through your personal experience, you just said that.
This is very true. Like, the both, like, Dhyanlinga, well, actually, Dhyanlinga, Bhairavi, Sadhguru, they're not, I don't need to be in the same room as them to be with them. And this will sound really, maybe even weird for the people who are not used to any of that, but this is not something that I believe. It is something that is as real for me as this computer is right now for me. Like, it is just real. I cannot make this up. I could not make this up. Like, they live through me, and because of them, I have the energy that I have. I can do what I do, and in the way that I do it also, they are such a tremendous support, and I could not have grown and changed so fast that if I didn't have access to those energies.
So, Anna, have you been to the ashram from there?
Not yet. Not yet. Okay. I've been slowly raising some money to go, like putting some money aside, because, you know, I couldn't work. And when you don't work, you're on like a disability, you really don't make much money. So it was difficult to put money aside. So now I just started to work. I'm putting money aside to go. I have in mind to go and do the teacher training also.
Wow.
This has been like a bit of a dream for me for like a year now. But I just learned yesterday that they will raise the price of a lot. Like, instead of being like 10,000 USD, it will become like 15 USD. And I have to pay in Canadian money, so it's a lot of money. So I might still do it, because this is really something that for me, it will close the, you know, if I can transmit what made me heal myself and what made me feel so much better, that would be so much for me, you know. But even if it doesn't work, like I said this yesterday to Patrick at the yoga school, even if I cannot become a yoga teacher at the moment, I have much more than I ever wished for. Like, my life is better than I ever thought it could be. How I feel within myself is much better than how I think it could feel. My relationships are much better than how I ever thought they could become. So, like, even if I cannot get this dream of being a yoga teacher because it's too expensive or whatever the reason, because they might not even accept me because the asymmetry in my body and the way my body is made, they might not even want. So, even if that's not possible, I know that I will get there anyway. I will go. And maybe what I'll be doing there, I can't even think about it. Because, you know, what I'm doing right now, I could not have imagined this. So maybe what's waiting for me there, I cannot imagine it at the moment. I don't know. And this is one of the beautiful aspects of it, is that I don't really know. So I just know that I need to go there in my life. I will go there soon. Just I need to raise the money and think if I'm going there and then coming back and then raising the money to go to the teacher training, because it's much more money. And I know I would like to go before like 3 years, you know. So I'm thinking about all of that. But there's many things that I'd like to explore. I'd like to explore the mysticism aspects. I'd like to maybe volunteer at their crematorium also to see how things are done there.
Right.
You're taking care of the dead there, because honestly, how we do it here, the way the funeral whole thing works, there's a lot of things that don't work. The quantity of plastic that is used is unbelievable. There's many things that could be done way better, and maybe to see how it's done properly at Isha would also help us to be more conscious about the way we're dealing with death here. So there's that, there's the mysticism aspect, there's many things I'm curious and I want to do stuff and learn stuff. So I think I may not be the one with who will decide what I'll do once I get there, but that's fine too.
I'm sure Devi will make it happen for whatever is best for you. Because for her, time, money, space, this doesn't matter. I hope, you know, whatever your life truly desires, it happens for you.
Exactly. And yes. As you walk on the way appears, as they say. So yeah. I'm walking on the way right now, so it will appear. I'm fine. It's okay.
You're beautiful, Anna. So thank you so much, Anna, for, you know, taking the time out from your schedule, from your life to share this with all of us. Because I'm sure it will touch someone, and you know, maybe it gives them that, you know, trust within them to take that first step. Or maybe they've skipped their sadhana for some time. They will understand, okay, it's time for me to get back on my sadhana, or visit that Hatha Yoga school, or go for that Sannidhi Puja, you know.
And what I'll tell them is, like, I want to see what it's going to do for you. Yeah. Like, I want, if it did that for me, I want you to try and do that for yourself and see where you'll go. Because I'm telling you, you're going to end up somewhere where you cannot even imagine right now, and it's going to be amazing. If you do it, and if you're consistent, and if you bring the enough work into your life, like, you want to make it happen and commit, wonderful things will happen.
So is there something that I didn't ask that which you would like to share? Maybe I missed asking you something.
Well, there's so many things, but we could talk for hours. So
awesome, Anna. Cool. So maybe we can do another podcast, you know, we can discuss it, something else, and then we can do it as a separate podcast. Does that work?
Anytime. I'll be glad.
Okay. Beautiful, Anna. So where can people reach out to you and, you know, message you, which would be the best place to reach out to you?
The Instagram, which is down there, is a good way. I also have a Facebook page. They can either go to a Kind's Facebook page or directly to my own, Mark Scott, also. And if they have questions, I'm really ready to answer questions or anything, if they clear doubts or anything. If you want to talk, if you have issues in your life, and you'd like to know maybe how is it possible to get better or whatever, I could maybe talk with you a little bit. I don't mind. I'm just open to all of you. So
before we end the podcast, anything that you'd like to share with the audience, something, a small message or something about yoga or whatever in general?
How about the chant?
Yeah, definitely. Let's. Yeah.
So I think I'll do the first chant, which I really heard some Sadhguru sing, and this was one of the aspects also that made me want to go into yoga, because I love music very much, and what I felt when I heard this chant, it completely changed my whole vibe, completely changed how I felt at this moment, that I was like, okay, it's possible to do this with sounds. This is really something amazing. So let's do this one. Jananam sukhadam maranam karunam milanam madhuram smaranam karunam kalavashyatiha sakalam karunam samaya Akhilam Karunam.
Thank you.